Thank you. And I would just like to start off by thanking the conference organisers for inviting me to Venice, a place I'd always like to visit. Of course, the change of a venue to Pisa was fine when the organisers arranged the reopening of the Leaning Tower, especially for this conference, so many thanks for doing that. My name is Brian Kelly, and I work at a small research unit called UConn, which is based at the University of Bath in England. And the title of my talk is Automated Benchmarking of Local Authority Websites. I will start off by giving some background to this work and describe some early work that we were involved in this area known as the WebWatch project. I will then describe our current approach to benchmarking activities and describe how we have applied this approach to a small pilot study of UK local authority websites. I will compare this with other approaches which can be made and from this lead on to some discussions of the pros and cons of different approaches and conclude by making some recommendations. So, the background. I'm sure that many of us we know that local and central government organisations are developing web-based services. Most, but not all, as we heard from the previous speaker. I think we are also becoming aware that there is a need to audit these services for a number of reasons. One may be to ensure compliance with standards and guidelines across the sector, which we particularly find within the public sector. For example, within the UK, the e-Envoys office has provided a set of guidelines, such as this one, the e-Government Interoperability Framework. So there is a need to measure compliance with such standards, and also with guidelines which may document best practice. So in my talk, I will describe our experiences in the use of web-based auditing services and summarises the benefits and limitations of this approach. I should say that I will not provide a detailed summary of a benchmarking survey across the website. I'm really talking about the issues which such a survey has unearthed. And I will not be covering the manual evaluation of websites. This is, of course, important, but is not the subject of my talk. However, I understand there is a presentation later this afternoon which will be on evaluating a set of Italian local authority websites which will address the manual evaluation and factors such as usability. So, why do we want to benchmark websites? Well, as I've said, compliance with standards and community guidelines. That's one clear reason. Another might be to feed back to bodies such as the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, so they can see if all of their acronyms that Ivan was talking about yesterday, are these actually being used? Are people making use of cascading style sheet technology, XML type technology? So there's a feedback to bodies such as the W3C. Also the uptake of particular technologies or trends within a community. The chair of the session was asking the question about search engines in Italian public administration sites. Are they using homegrown software or are they using commercial software? It's an interesting question. So looking at that type of question as well. Also the issue of the funders. The funders will have an interest in monitoring development across their funding area. And this type of approach can also assist members of the community themselves. So it provides an opportunity to see examples of good practice and to learn from them. And also to see examples of bad practice, examples of things which should be avoided. So the type of things that we could do with this approach. Clearly things such as compliance with W3C Web Accessibility Initiative Guidelines. again, I think there will be a talk on this tomorrow. Related to that, there might be issues such as the size of entry points. So, not a standard issue, but perhaps might be a community guideline. Might be, well, broadband isn't here yet. We heard lots of discussions about this first thing yesterday morning. So we might need to provide smaller entry points which are quickly downloading for people using modems. So there might be issues about the trends, the approaches that local governments are taking. The compliance with the various W3C standards, HTML, CSS, XML, and a lot more three-letter acronyms. And there's the development type issue. So if we see that people aren't really following HTML standards or CSS standards or WAIS standards, we might ask ourselves, why? Why isn't this happening? Is it a problem with education? Perhaps there is still a need to convince people of the importance of compliance standards. There might be a problem with the tools. So a set of issues which can help in a developmental approach. So our work in this area first started around 1997. The British Library funded a project which was known as WebWatch. And back in those early days, there weren't a great deal of commercial products available. So we started off, we were using the Harvest indexing software, which we used, open source software, which we used, we developed, we modified. And we used that software to audit a number of public sector communities throughout the UK. For example, public library websites, university websites, and the like. So we carried out a number of surveys, and many of the results are available at the URL mentioned. By 1999, the funding had finished. We only had funding available for 1 year. And the software developer left for a highly paid job in the commercial sector. This happened. And around this time, we realised that it was becoming quite expensive to develop software for ourselves. We suffer problems in recruiting good software developers. It was really difficult to get software developers in a university environment because the salaries are so much higher in the commercial sector. And we also noticed that there were becoming to be available a number of website auditing tools. And in addition, a number of website auditing web services. Hope that translates into Italian. So websites that you can go to and it will tell you something about the website. So since 1999, we have been making use of these mainly freely available websites to benchmark various public sector web communities. And we've been publishing our findings every 3 months in our Ariadne e-journal. And some have gained some experience in some of the issues. Let me just, if I can find, show one of the articles that we published, which is a survey of UK university search engines. I mention this because it's very relevant to the first speaker. So we were finding similar findings such as about 40% of universities, this was about 2-3 years ago, did not have a search engine. We have repeated this survey every 6 months and now we find that the number of search engines of organisations without a search engine has dropped. HTDIG is the most popular search engine. Excite has dropped in popularity. Microsoft has gained in popularity. But the big change, big interesting change, is that Google, the externally hosted Google service, is now widely used. And it's now about the fourth most popular approach to internal search engines, which is quite interesting. And there are lots of issues associated with that. I should also mention that we have tried to adopt this developmental approach, and our findings are discussed across the sector, the webmasters across the sector. We'll look to see what's happening. We'll engage in debates on the pros and cons of different approaches. So, let's consider the type of approach. I'm sure many of you will be familiar with Bobby. And Bobby is very popular. Perhaps it's too popular because people tend to confuse Bobby with the WEI guidelines. Bobby is one example, one widely used example of a web-based tool that can measure the compliance with the W3C WEI guidelines. So there's a screen dump is shown. These type of services are usually designed, developed for interactive use. You go to a website, you type in a URL, you press the enter key, and you get some results back. However, it is possible to automate the input to these services, which can help to speed up the submission process. And if you are a clever software developer, which I'm afraid I'm not, my last programming language was Fortran, shows how old I am. But if you were a good software developer, I guess you could write a HTML scraping service, which could automatically take the results from those servers to automate the processing of the results. We have not done that for a number of reasons. One is, as I mentioned, we don't have the software developer resources to do this. But perhaps more importantly, there are questions about the quality of the results which these services are providing. And that's what I'll be talking about in my talk. There is, of course, also the issue about, are you allowed to scrape the HTML output from other services? It's in a grey, uncertain legal area as to the automated processing of results from services. Some services will say, you're not allowed to do this because our business model is that we receive funding from the advertising that people see, and to use a scraping technique will mean that we'll lose the revenue associated with that. So we haven't yet gone down that route. So we have the results, and we provide our results not just as a set of histograms and tables, but also as a live access to the web services themselves. So on the diagram, you can see the type of URL. So we have the URL of the local authority as an input parameter to the web server. So simply clicking on that will get the latest set of results. So there are advantages with this approach in the openness of the methodology. It's not like I've developed a desktop tool which gives me some results, and if somebody wants to check my results, they have to install the same tool themselves. Everybody can use the same service if they have a web browser. And there's also the ability to compare one's own website with the results that have been published by adding your own URL to the input service. So, freely available, and anybody can use it. So what happens when we try and use this type of service? Well, I looked at the UK online service, and that seems to show that the service is a WEI compliant site. And one of the other results provided by Bobby is the size of the website, and it says it's 0.5k. That looks like a nice, small, quickly downloading website. But of course, it's too small. So you say, well, what's actually happening here? If you look behind the surface, you actually see that what Bobby is analysing is a redirect error message. So it's just a single line that says, go to another URL. So if you look at the destination of the redirect, you still get a compliant, oh no, the pages then does not comply with web guidelines. And we get a size of 1.17k, which is still strangely small. And so we notice that what we're actually analysing is a frame set. So we then have to go through and analyse all of the different components of the frame size in order to get a result for the entry point is so big. There are problems with this tool. One of the frames could not be analysed, I suspect, because of the lack of support for cookies in Bobby, but I'm guessing here because the methodology that Bobby uses is not really documented. And so there we've got the results. Let's look at another example. Let's see, is that favourites? So somebody was asking yesterday for an example. Somebody was asking yesterday for let's have some real-life web use. So I will type in a URL and test now, and it will go away, and I'll come back in a minute when provided the result. So this is another example of a web-based auditing service, and it will check links, broken links, HTML, compliance with HTML standards, browser compatibility issues, file sizes, and the like. And you'll get a nice, attractive display, such as illustrated. So it's now going through and checking all those various links. So we used that tool, and what did we find? We found that it gave a set of different results. So we found that the results could be different on different websites. Sometimes they were the same, sometimes they were different. So these two approaches were using different set of algorithms. They had different ways of addressing redirects. So do you analyze the redirect message or do you obey the redirect message? Do you analyze the frame set or do you go away and get all the individual frame pages themselves? There are issues to do with the support of the robot exclusion protocol, which says automated tools, robot software, should not follow, go into directories which are prohibited through the use of the robots.txt file. So one service was obeying that protocol, another was ignoring it. And so if it can't go into a directory containing all the images, it can't detect the sizes of those pages. And there were also differences in analysing external resources. So one website would not, I think it was Bobby, would not go away and retrieve externally hosted JavaScript file, link source equals thread.javascript, or external cascading style sheet files, whereas the other service was analysing those file sizes. There are also issues about splash screens. You see one page displayed for 10 seconds and then moved on to another page a bit later on. Is that one pages or two pages? What are you analysing? Should you analyse the two pages together? There are really no standards in this area to define what can be done. So that approach has been used to evaluate websites, web pages. But it's also possible to benchmark various characteristics of websites and not just individual pages. So things like the number of links to a website might be an indication of the popularity of a website. And in fact, this metric is now being used within the commercial sphere. I've been to presentations where somebody has announced a new website and says it's better than the opposition because there are twice as many links to our website as there are to the competitors' websites. So people are using this type of metric. There are parameters, metrics such as the numbers of pages which are indexed in search engines such as AltaVista. Sometimes you may find that a large website has none of its pages indexed in AltaVista, and this might be indicative of failures with the design of the website. It might use frames technologies which act as a barrier to indexing engines, or it might use proprietary formats or splash screens which again prohibit search engines from accessing the website. So indications like this can be helpful in the development of websites. Another example is the relationships with other websites, whether people follow one website to another and the links that are provided. This is available through one of the websites, I've forgotten now, Netscape. From the Netscape What's Related button, you can find this parameter. And it's also possible to get information on things such as the server availability and downtime through servers such as Netcraft, www.netcraft.com. So there's some of the approaches and some of the issues. There are also a couple of other sort of systemy type files which can be useful to analyse. I mentioned the robots.txt file. So is one provided? how comprehensive is it? Is it valid? Sometimes you find that these files are provided, but they are invalid. Another useful file to analyse is the 404 error page. Many people forget this. You might find that it's one of the most popular pages on your website. So it can be important to provide useful facilities on a on a website. So perhaps a tailored 404 web page, which reinforces your organization's branding and provides functionality such as a search facility or a navigational bar or contact information. I should point out that these can be useful, but there is still a need for the manual observation of such functionality, so it's straying away from my automated type benchmarking. So that's the type of approach we've been taking, and I think is important. So I believe there appears to be an increasing interest in website benchmarking, website auditing, surveys of websites. You know, there are a number of terms that can be used to define this. If you do a Google search for something like web auditing, you'll find there are a lot of commercial companies out there. They will say, you know, give us many thousands of pounds and we will look at your website, compare it against your top 10 competitors and make recommendations for you. So clearly the commercial sector recognises the advantages in this type of approach. And within our sector, there are various bodies are doing this type of work. So within the UK local government sector, there is an organisation called SOCOTIM, Society of IT Managers, something IT Managers, and they publish an annual report which is looking at local authority websites. So quite a comprehensive in terms of looking at content, looking at coverage, looking at facilities. So they provide a survey across the community, and they will also provide tailored benchmarking surveys for £495 if you're a member of the organisation, or £950 otherwise. So we can see, you know, people feel there is a need for this type of approach. So if there's a need, there's a question, who should do the work? So should it be the community themselves? So somebody can set themselves up and, you know, provide this type of benchmarking. But there might be issues there about how self-critical one would be. It could be that we leave it to the funders. But I think there's always this danger when the funders start looking at you and monitoring you. You start to be nervous about things and you might sort of tailor your site to look good on the type of criteria that the funders are applying. So there's this perhaps tension with the funders. Perhaps it's a neutral body, perhaps a telecommunications body or a research body might be in a better position. Perhaps a university which has a research group in public administration might be in a neutral position to look across a sector. But of course, this gets tied in with the what is the purpose of the benchmarking. Is it for research? Is it so that we can write papers and go to nice places in Italy? Or is it linked to the funding? Is it measures of compliance? If you fail to comply with the WAE guidelines, will the government, you know, decrease the amount of money it pays to you? Will you have to pay penalty fees? This is happening in other sectors. Within the UK, there are penalty fees that have been applied to the rail bodies if they fail to arrive on time. So there might be this issue. Or is it a more of a developmental approach? Is it to say, well, we're all working together, here are some good examples, look at this local authority here, it's at the top and it's got a WAE compliance website and it's got millions of pages, let's look at the approaches that it provides and see what we can learn from that. So it's really that latter approach that I have been involved with in my benchmarking work within UK universities. And to move on in the last few minutes, I think there are a number of technical issues which have arisen from the type of work that we've been doing. So I have been looking at the use of websites which have really been designed for manual type use. And there are problems with that type of use. Has it finished yet? Yes, it's finished. But it takes time. It takes a few few minutes to go through, and I'm twiddling my thumbs. And I do this for 160 university websites, and it's a bit boring. To do it for 400 local authority websites would be very, very boring. So it's really the wrong model. So we should be looking at more of an automated model. So what should we be doing? Well, I think now perhaps there is the need to look at web services. So the type of approach which are designed for machine-to-machine type use. And in yesterday's presentation by Ivan Herman, we heard about the web services infrastructure which has been developed. Technologies, I think they're running out of three-letter acronyms, so now we're finding four-letter acronyms such as SOAP and WSDL. So perhaps we should be looking at these type of services, of technologies, to provide what is perhaps confusingly known as a web service. There is also, I think, a need for a neutral and reusable output format from benchmarking services. So we see here we have a set of results, and we can go through and find the detailed results. So 16 HTML errors, and we go through and we get some information about it. And it is very time consuming to put that in an Excel spreadsheet or for subsequent post-processing. So we need a neutral format. So what neutral format should we use? Well, of course, it should be XML. We know that. But which XML DTD should we be using? Now, it's interesting that W3C Web Accessibility Initiative has developed an XML application called EARL, the Evaluation and Reporting Language, which has been developed as a neutral interchange language for reporting on evaluation reports. So output from tools such as Bobby would ideally be provided in this language. So a neutral format which could then be reused by other applications. And as Earl is based on RDF, so within W3C, all new metadata type applications make use of RDF. This enables one to describe findings in a rich way. So it may be that the Bobby version, whatever tool, reported that this website was so big based upon parameters of ignoring frame sets or whatever. So we have a rich way of defining our results. So my final three slides are a number of recommendations. Well, I believe there is a clear need for standards in areas of defining websites. So we don't know what a page is. We don't know what a user is. We don't know what a user session is. We've got problems here. If we're starting to benchmark websites, we're going to find inconsistencies and incompatibilities because the results will be what the applications assume. There are lack of standards. There are a lack of agreed ways of handling unusual conditions. So what should you do? Should you respect the robot exclusion protocol? There's a whole set of difficult issues with personalised websites. I should have mentioned that you often find that some websites have a very small file size, and it might be way compliant. And you actually analyse the page, and you discover that what it is this page needs a frames compliant browser, download Netscape Now, which is clearly not what we should be analysing. So there are issues about different views provided and how you benchmark when there are lots of different views. So for those of you who might be interested in developing a benchmarking type service, there are sets of issues. I would say that the benchmarking services perhaps should be capable of emulating a range of user agents, provide control over whether the robot exclusion protocol should be observed or not, and provide some user control, so greater set of control over the use of these type of services. And definitions of a page. So, that's an example. And then finally, I think my recommendation, I would say that there are I would say there are benefits to communities in monitoring trends and observing best practices, and perhaps also other related communities. So what is happening within the UK local government sector? What's happening in the Italian government sector? Let's talk, let's compare things. There might be benefits to sharing results across the communities. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Great time there for a very short question.
How does your evaluation strategy apply to websites where much of the content is
online? Good question. I think a similar question was asked of the first speaker. Again, I think this is an area in which there aren't really defined approaches to doing this. It's clearly an important area. I don't have an answer to the question, but I agree that it is a question that needs to be addressed. Sorry for that. There's another
question here.
Right, do your work with public administration scientists, because I think that they will say, okay, benchmarking, fine, it's enough in itself, but does it improve the process we are interested in? Does it improve the delivery of services? Do you have any contacts with people like that?
We have started to make contacts with the broader public administration sector through to changes in our funding. So some colleagues do have some links, but we're hoping to develop those links and to do exactly the type of thing that you're suggesting.
By my second question, you are talking about the delivery of services, but when you look at it, you can use it for higher level public administration things, like public policy making and so on, agenda setting. Do you think of expanding your research in that direction?
Our research unit is more of a technology research unit, so we're more focused on the technology type issues, but we would be looking to advise, say, the policy makers on some of the technical issues behind their interests.
Okay, well, let's go to the next talk. I know we did it.